Hey, ladies and gentlemen, guess what? It's Me and Green Nation Podcast, episode 62. And I guess you can call this the first of the new season, 2016 edition, right? Fall season. With me, as usual, not always, but as usual, Mr. Greg Godecker, how you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Well, maybe not fantastic, but I'm here.
That's good. All right, so let's call this our season preview edition. New season's only 2 weeks away. 2 weeks.
Hard to believe.
It is hard to believe. It seems like just yesterday, I don't know, I mean, just yesterday anything happened. We were at the Heart of Dallas Bowl. You know, seems it's crazy that 2 years have passed since
that.
Since
doesn't that. Seem like just yesterday. There's been a plenty of bad stuff that's happened in between.
Well, that's the beauty of being a human, is that you can forget things like that. You know? New season, new hope. As my wife says occasionally, she says, you know, I like the new season. It feels like anything is possible, you know? And
Like Kevin Garnett said, anything's possible.
I mean, it is. Anything is possible, including North Texas going something like 7-5. I saw one blogger posted that in his season preview.
What the hell does he know?
And I think that blogger was me. And we'll talk about why I might be crazy. But before we do, let's talk about the Mean Green Nation season preview. I kind of went position by position. Overview, some coaches. It was about as in-depth as Mean Green Nation ever gets. I think was it last year you kind of did something similar? 2014?
2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago. But every year, either you or I, or some combination thereof, has gone basically position by position and kind of give you a recap. And it's really the best that you'll get anywhere. And I don't know if I'm proud to say that because we're just a couple of guys, you know what I mean? And there are people that are being paid to do this kind of thing. And they don't really get, like, SB Nation, everybody tries to do Paul Meyerberg did for a while with the New York Times and pre-snap read and do an entire season preview on every team. Mm-hmm. And not all of them are good. And SB Nation, like Bill Connolly, God. he does his, and it's really numbers-based. And I got to say, it's not really good. I don't really like it, especially since he does it in April. Anyway.
Right.
So there's a tooting our own horn. Two.
Yeah, you know, you got to give some credit. Vito does a pretty good put together for the paper. He works hard on that. And then
on layouts and stuff.
Yeah. Phil Steele does a pretty good job too.
Yeah. So there you go. Mean Green Nation preview. I tried to keep it as close to camp, and pretty much immediately after I hit publish, things changed. We got new guys. I think Jenkins came in.
Right.
Lots of stuff happens. I think as what I say, my mom professor says, pretty much as soon as your draft is done, it's out of date. You know what I mean? As soon as your literature review is done, it's immediately out of date.
That's why you got to write for the future.
Yeah, and immediately it's already just taken. You know, as we said, it's amazing. Time flies, guys. So let's get into it. We're gonna kind of to steal a line from another podcast I listened to. This will be kind of the director's commentary on that, 10,000-word preview. You ready to get into this? You have any prefaces before we jump into the 2016 season football team?
I'm up for whatever.
That's Greg's new life now. He's like, yeah, I mean, whatever, man, whatever. I text him, I'm like, hey, you ready to do this podcast? Yeah, whatever, now it's good. Later's good. Whenever's good. Well, that's a good attitude to have, dude. All right. So, number one, offense. I think it's important to start with offense because that's what everybody cares about. When you think about football, you don't really think about special teams. You're like, man, how's our kicking game doing this year? And then that's fine. Offense is the fun part. Offense is the part that you play when you're a kid and you want to be the running back or the quarterback and run around and do the stuff. So, mm-hmm. We'll start with offense. Last 2 years, we've had pretty much the worst offenses that we could imagine. I thought those Daryl Dickey last season or two there were pretty awful, where they was like run up the middle, mm-hmm. throw an incomplete pass to Johnny Quinn, or throw a pass to Johnny Quinn short of the sticks and then punt. I thought that was pretty terrible. I was wrong. This is worse. We had quarterbacks that didn't know how to play quarterback. We had coaches that didn't know how to pick quarterbacks. And everybody was demotivated. This year, good news, ladies and gentlemen, Seth Luttrell, air raid guy, led UNC's offense to record numbers, brought in Graham Harrell, state legend, college football legend. Good things, right? Right?
Yeah. That's plenty of reason to be excited. You got two guys there that, they're known for putting points on the board. You know, you're a very, very much a disciple of the air raid. You know a lot about it. You preach a lot about it. it's been very successful throughout college football. And now the air raid, not so much Todd Dodge stuff, but the air raid is at North Texas. And we have some of the best people that played in it and learned from the best coaching our team.
Yeah, and I think that's important to denote there. There have been some other coaches that have taught it or brought it over or said they're going to do it, but not necessarily done a good job either because they were like late converts or something. I don't know. It's a fairly easy offense to pick up, and I think that's kind of one of the reasons why it spread so easily. Like Tony Franklin, he's an offensive coordinator at Middle Tennessee now. When he got fired at Kentucky, he was out of a job for a while. He was actually kind of blacklisted, and he decided, you know what? I need to make money. I'll go around selling the, at the time, newfangled offense. He packaged it down to a system, taught it to a lot of high school coaches. And, you know, it's fairly easy to learn because it's really just like repetition. And that's what's pretty great about it. All right, so I think the point that you just made about Graham Harrell, a player, Seth Luttrell, a player when it was implemented under Mike Leach, and then a coach under Mike Leach for a while, is those are good points because, yeah, those are – they learned from the source. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh, that air raid over there looks good. We'll do that. Like, say, Tommy Tuberville style. It was –
Tuberville?
Yeah. Well, I mean, because he went to Texas Tech, and he's like, yeah, we're going to keep doing what they're doing, you know, pass the ball around. And I think he kept, like, Nate – was it, I forget the guy's name, Brown. He was the coach there. But I think they were saying that he kind of was like a little, he didn't fully buy in. He was like, yeah, this is the new offense, but I don't really believe in it. And, but yeah, I think we have coaches now that, like you said, played in it. And not only that, were successful and learned the source. I think this could go a couple ways. And I think the initial transition, if you look at, say, Mike Leach or Sonny Dykes when he went to Cal or even when he went to Louisiana Tech, is that it's a rough one. You know, a lot of tosses, a lot of passes, trying to get players that fit the system. And so you get, like, converted players. And we have that in this situation. Kenny Byers playing inside receiver. And a lot of growing pains, but eventually it pays off. And right. You look at Washington State, I think they're comparable to North Texas in that they are not the main – they don't get a lot of big-time recruits there. Yeah, right. And so it took them a while to get guys into the system and to become what Mike Leach wanted them to become. Cal's a little bit different. They were changing from a Jeff Tedford's kind of pro offense to a spread one.
I think one of the important things about our offense is probably our most skilled guys were already on the offense. Guys like Gorey, Rutherford, Wilson. You know, Gorey and Rutherford, they caught a lot of balls in high school. You know, they played in a wide open offense. So I think that helps a little bit in the transition.
Yeah, and I think the fact that a lot of, like you said, guys in high school here have seen this kind of thing before, so it's not a huge transition for them. Okay, so let's start from the top. Quarterback in this system, and pretty much every system in college football, is very important. You have to do a lot of reading of the defense at the snap. I, you know, just kind of a sidebar, inside baseball kind of thing, because I was just following up on a conversation that I was just having with you in the Slack. Apparently, Sam Houston State, they have their receivers do a lot more reading of their defense. And that's kind of what I was getting into. So Mike Leach and a lot of air raid guys have their quarterback do a lot of pre-snap things. They read the routes like, all right, we got two backside slants here. Is that going to be open? No, no. Then that means that definitely this front side stick route is going to be open. Let's do that. Or this snag combo is going to be open. And so then, you know, I know what I'm getting on the backside. So that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you need a guy that's familiar with the offense enough to know those kinds of things and to have the confidence and maybe the arm strength, but not so much the arm strength. If you know where you're going, you can kind of make up for the arm strength. But right. Basically the confidence to, you know, make the decision, to go up there, say, this, all right, now make the throw. It's confidently step into it. And I think it benefits us that we're getting a fifth-year guy, Alec right. Morris, that can do mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And I didn't really know too much about him when he transferred over. I was like, okay, just the senior guy. You know, I don't know where he was, what the deal was. The more I've read about him, the more I've seen him play, I like it. The more, and a lot, really, what I've heard about him from the coaches makes me think that we have a good one on our hands. And what do you think? You've seen him actually play in the scrimmage, so I'm interested to hear your thoughts on him.
Yeah, I mean, I pointed out on Twitter and other places that I think that right now he's a top five quarterback in Conference USA. And I don't think that's like, that's overhyping somebody because.
Wait, too much. I need to get like a button that's like, ring, 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 hot sports take from Greg Odecker. Yeah.
I don't think it's really that much of a hot sports take. I mean, yeah. Look at the quarterbacks in Conference USA. It's not a quarterback driven league. I mean, there's Mullins and Stockstill and Litton, and then what? And Magoo. He had a good year at Florida FIU last year. But then after that, I mean, what are you looking at? You know, I thought Jared Johnson down at UTSA would have won the battle by now, and he hasn't. So is it that much of a reach to say that Alec Morris is top five? No. Is it a reach to say he's top three? Maybe right now, but if he gets some help from his other guys around him, he has the ability to be an all-conference-type quarterback. I mean, like you said, the things that you expect from a fifth-year quarterback, fifth-year senior quarterback, is to know where to go with the ball. He struggled a little bit in spring, you know, transitioning from a pro-style offense, Lane Kiffin, to a wide-open air raid, which he kind of ran some in high school. So I think
it was a half decade ago. So yeah,
right. So just getting refamiliarized with the lingo, where to go with the ball, the wide receivers, all those type of things. So what I saw in the scrimmage and some of the practices is he's fine. I mean, we finally have a quarterback where you can feel like we're going into the SMU game, and I feel good about that position. I don't feel like, you know, we're not throwing McNulty out there or somebody that doesn't know what they're doing. Morris, he knows what he's doing in this offense. He's in control. He's the commander out there. You could just see the calmness about the offense when he's on the field. So I like that. Now, is he the most talented quarterback out there? No. Otherwise, he would have stayed at Alabama and probably won the job last year, competed for the job this year. You could tell some of the areas where he's mobile, but he's not fast. He has adequate arm strength. That's not great. He wins with anticipation on some of the throws. So
yeah, and I think that's one of the benefits of this kind of offense is that you get a lot of repetitions. Like one of the things about the air raid and one of the reasons it's been so successful is that it's really a practice plan. It's an approach to the game. It's saying, you know what, we're going to throw the ball a lot, so a lot of our practice is going to be devoted to throwing the ball. That even the backup guys throw the ball a lot. And they have the drill. I think this is pretty famous by now, where all five quarterbacks will be on the field. They'll all run through all the plays. And so five receivers will catch the ball and go score on every practice repetition. And that's important for all the receivers to get repetitions and actually catch the ball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not just run routes on air. It helps them during the games because they know to expect the ball at every position, And it helps every single quarterback because they're going through all their reads. It's not just the starter or the second team guy. It's, you know, everybody. And it's why Mike Leach was able to, for a streak there, have like three straight 50-year senior guys or senior quarterbacks step in and throw for a billion yards. Was it B.J. Simmons, who is a coach now.
Right.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. And, you know, Alec Morris doesn't have to be number one draft pick material. He just has to be good enough for Conference USA. And, I mean, you know, for all we want to say about Conference USA being better than Sun Belt, this, that, and the other, this is a league that you can have one or two talented guys take you a long way. I mean, that's applicable to college football in general, but definitely in Conference USA where, you know, one five-star dude or former five-star dude, you know, can make a bigger impact, you know, where there are two- and three-star guys all in the conference, you know, than elsewhere, like at Texas or TCU, et cetera, et cetera. So I think this is maybe an overused comparison, but it's the most recent one we have. Louisiana Tech got Driscoll in last year. Was it Jeff or Jake or John?
It was Jeff.
Yeah, whatever. They have too many of them. They got to think of new first names over there. Start with not Jay. And then, you know, they had Cody Sokol the year before that. And these guys, were they number one draft pick material? No. Driscoll was a little bit better than Cody Sokol, but Cody Sokol stepped in and, you know, made Louisiana Tech pretty much contender. We'll see what Higgins is able to do.
Yeah, Driscoll was draft material based upon his measurables. Yeah. Not necessarily what he was able to accomplish on the field.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think Alec Morris is good enough. Is he better, let's say, just run down North Texas quarterbacks that we've had in the last 8 years? Is he better than any of the guys we had last year? McNulty, DeMarcus Smith, Josh Greer? Yes. Is he better than Dejon Williams? Yes. Is he better than Derek Thompson? I mean, if you go by his high school rating, yeah. Do you think Alec Morris now is better than Derek Thompson, say, senior year, junior year, 2012, 2013?
Yes.
Okay. So then there you go. That's something to look forward to. Because Derek Thompson had a hard time beating out his competition. I think it was his junior year, senior year. I think it was kind of an issue. So that's good. That puts me at ease because that's been North Texas' biggest, hugest problem. And this is where I got into this in the preview. That I would venture to say that we would have won more games last 2 years if we had confidence in the quarterback.
Yeah, I'd agree.
So, you had a post. You had some projections for him?
Right. Yeah. I don't remember what they were. Been a busy week. I think it was somewhere around...
I'm going to bring them up just so that we can discuss them.
I
want to
say like 2,800 yards is what I thought. I projected for him, maybe.
I'm going to look it up, man.
Something like that. It was under 3,000. I think it was like 25 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 62% completion percentage.
Yeah, you had him throwing it 410 times, completing 254 for 2,800 yards, 25 TDs. You know what? I'd take all of that. That would put him right near the top of a single-season list at North Texas. And 25 and 10, that's pretty great. I just think that we'll throw a little bit more than that, but I think it's important, you know, like I said, it's kind of director's commentary. If you want to tell the folks, how do you put this together? Like, do you just pull them out of your behind, or you just write some numbers on the board and like 2,800 sounds good. Kind of give them a little bit of your method here. If you please.
A little bit of my method is based upon what, a lot of historical data to get your starting point. So, you look at what has Seth Luttrell done in his previous offenses? What can he bring to North Texas? What is the opponents that we're facing this year? What have they given up historically? And then what has UNT done historically at that position? So basically, when you kind of combine all three, you get a starting point. And once I have the starting point, then I'll work with the number and decide on, do I think it should go up? Do I think it should go down? And so you know, last year I got close on some things, and so I've continued to roll with the formula that I have, and so that's where I ended up. When I got and I saw Alex Morris's, you know, when I came up, put him at the 2,800 yards, 25 touchdowns, I felt like, okay, that's not, you know, egregious. It's not overblown. It's something that, you know, could happen. You know, it's not saying, you know, okay, some air raid quarterbacks, yes, they're going to obviously blow it up. But do you think that's reasonable to say for a North Texas quarterback right now? No, I don't think so. Do you think it would be reasonable to say for an air raid quarterback to get only 2,000 yards passing? No. So, okay, so we're at 2,800 yards, and I feel pretty good about that prediction where we're at.
Yeah, like, I think that's a reasonable method to have. I think the only thing that I took, because I riffed on this a little bit, was that I think Seth Luttrell, and this might be just me, I mean, this is the first time he's really that he really has control of his own offense. I went back to when was it Larry Fedora was an offensive coordinator at Oklahoma State. And basically, I think that he likes more of a balance, and he was always kind of a run, like run with a quarterback kind of dude. And I think he brought that to UNC, even when Seth Luttrell was there, because they didn't really they actually there was an uptick. They threw the ball what like five more times than they did before he was offensive coordinator. But then he went down a little bit more. But like I said, I think that was more of this is Larry Fedora's offense. He's like, I like these air raid principles, but let's keep it, let's mix in the run a lot more.
I think when you watch practice, even the scrimmages, you see they want to throw the ball more.
Yeah. And then I went back and I looked at when Luttrell was co-offensive coordinator at Arizona in 2010, 2011. He went to Indiana 2012, 2013. And they were throwing the ball, the least amount of times was 39 times at Indiana. And I think they had quarterback issues. They had like injuries. They had to bring a young guy in. So I wouldn't be surprised if we threw the ball 40 times a game. When I back of napkin kind of thought that we'd get what I say. I was like a solid season for an air raid quarterback here would be 490 attempts, 300 completions, 3,500 yards, 28 TDs, 9 interceptions. TD interception ratio is not altogether different from what you predicted there. I just think we'll have more yards and more attempts. If you do the math there, it's like 40 attempts a game. And at first I was like, is that right? I went back to look at that, and I feel more comfortable with that. What were you going to say?
I think the thing that kind of, you know, pulled me back just a little bit was the fact that you have Wilson, you have Ivory, you have Weich, you have Nick Smith. You've got so much talent in the backfield that if you're a guy like Luttrell, you know, in the first year offense, you're going to lean on your best players. And if your best players are your running backs, I mean, don't you want to run the ball more? But see, you know, I'm with you. I think we're going to throw a lot more than people think we are. Just because we have Jeffrey Wilson doesn't mean that we need to feed him 30 times a game.
Yeah. And yeah, I think that's going to keep him fresher, and it's also going to keep the offense more balanced, believe it or not. Just by the way, what did I say? They ran the ball when he was at Indiana 33 times a game, and their leading running back at the time, this is what, 2012? Am I looking in right? Yeah, 2012. Stephen Houston had 161 carries for 749 yards. D'Angelo Roberts ran 83 times for 300 yards. They also had Tevin Coleman. I think, was he a freshman that year? Yeah. So there you go. I think there's a way to get balance in this thing with still throwing the ball, because you're not always throwing the ball 15 yards down the field. You're throwing the ball short. You're getting the ball to the running backs in space sometimes on screens and things like that. And I know that might conjure up memories of the Todd Dodge dink and dunk offense, but please remember that Todd Dodge's offense was a little bit more productive at times than maybe it seemed. But it was also like the defense that was causing the problems. When you're down 40 to nothing at halftime, you know, it's going to affect your pass game.
Would you associate a Todd Dodge offense more along the lines of like an Art Briles in Baylor?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, like I mean, I don't really remember the details of like a Todd Dodge offense, but it was more of a, it was like a spread, but it was not quite full on like air raid kind of things. And it had, it had some of the principles there, but like every offense has some of the principles. Every offense has like run and shoot principles. I think the thing to note here is, like we said, that we have guys that learn from very successful coaches, from Mike Leach, you know, from Kevin Wilson, from Larry Fedora, you know. So I feel like they're, you know, we're getting right from the source of really successful offensive coaches. So it's not just like, well, this was great in high school when I had, you know, guys that were well-trained, you know what I mean, right, since middle school to run this offense. Anyway, I think they're going to be successful. And that was kind of my point about this. Either way, even if it's 28-70, 25-10, right, that's better than we had last year. Even if it is what I said, and it's, 3,500 yards, which is obviously a little bit more better, that's better than we had last year. And that is great, ladies and gentlemen, and I feel really good about that. And that leads me to the running back position, as we said. What does that mean for Jeffrey Wilson? Does that mean he's not going to get the ball a lot? Does that mean that we're going to go away from him? He's probably our most consistent. He was at least our most productive player coming back from last year. And I feel like this will open things up for him even more. If you look at some of his more successful games against like a Marshall, even against UTSA, when we were going four wide and there was a threat, the quarterback threat of like DeMarcus Smith chucking it downfield. And so the defense had to back up just a little bit. Those were the times when Jeffrey Wilson had some amazing runs, when he could slice through the defense, use his speed, run through arm tackles, and make plays. How do you feel about Jeff Wilson this year?
I mean, you have to feel good because he's talented. I don't think he's ever lived up to the talent that we believe that he has. Part of that's injuries, part of that's, you know, coaching, part of that's offensive line production. So we view him as an all-conference running back, and he can be that. Has he gotten there? No. I don't think that he's going to take the major step forward this year to being an all-conference running back. I think that there's such a good group of running backs that we have that, like we mentioned earlier, he's going to split time. He's going to split, you know, reps with them. You know, I think I have them going for under 1,000 yards. And that's just based upon, you know, Latrell's, his previous times that he's been an offensive coordinator. I don't think he's ever had a running back that's had, you know, that's gotten a huge chunk of the carries. I think like the highest percentage of carries was like 41%. I don't know, last year he had, you know, the quarterback, what was his name, Williams, right? He had over 100 carries. But still, when you have guys like Ivory and Nick Smith and obviously the camp superstar Weich that's come in there, those guys, they need carries too, and they're going to be productive as well. So I think Wilson's going to have a great year, but I think the running backs as a group are going to have a great year.
Yeah, and I like that better. I like that more than just relying on one dude. I didn't really know too much about Anthony Weich, you know, when I was writing up the season preview. So if you read it now, there's like two sentences about him. But I did note that he had speed, agility, and power based on what I saw of his JUCO film. And in that way, he kind of reminded me a little bit of Nick Smith, that he was fast, had agility, probably can catch the ball. And I think they're two of the same kind of running backs, and maybe the kind of running backs that we'll see being recruited here, guys that have nice hands that can catch the ball in this offense, that's obviously important, and that are versatile in that way. That Weich is he's probably going to return kicks, or at least be in the conversation to return kicks. That's a way to get him touches if maybe he's, you know, say, Willie Ivory and Jeff Smith are out there dominating the running back position. That's a nice way to get him touches, is in the return game. Or like in the screen game, because apparently he has the best hands of the running backs. I've heard that from a couple different people.
He looks very natural out there. fielding the punts, catching the balls. He looks explosive. He looks explosive.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, I mean, that's what you want. You want guys that are obviously, you want complete football players, right? You know what I mean? Like, well, this guy can only run the ball if you stick it in his chest, and that's the only way he can get it. Well, that's obviously very limiting. I, too, am excited about the running back position. I thought going into this season, before I even did the preview, that it was probably our most well-stocked position. And the recent additions have, I just feel like that we just stocked it even better. It's a nice little history of running backs here at North Texas. You got Lance Dunbar, Brandon Byrd was good, Reggie Pegram was good, Antoine Jimerson was good at times, although he just never held on to the ball. Obviously Patrick Cobb's way back in the past. So I think Jeff Wilson at the very least has the talent to continue that tradition. And if not, if he tops out at like a Brandon Byrd type season, I think I'd be happy with that. Totally happy with the Brandon Byrd season. And same thing with Willie Ivory. I feel like he has there's a lot of people that are really excited about him. What I'd like to see him do is make some of these runs that he had in some of these games against a first-team defense. A lot of times he was coming in when we were down by 30 and then tearing off a run. And that was fine. It's great because it was nice to see. But, you know, that's the next step. It's like, you know, you want to see him do it in practice. Okay, cool. Let's see you do it in the game. Okay, cool. Let's see you do it at an important part of the game. You know what I mean? Let's see you do it when they know it's coming. Those are the progressions that you take.
He will get his chance.
Do you see a lot of Nick Smith playing? The guy out of Arlington, Martin?
No, I don't see a ton of action for him. I think... He's good. Don't get me wrong. He's really good. But he may be one of the guys that they hope that they can redshirt. Unless there's an injury to Wilson, which is possible, Ivory or, you know, White. Those three guys, I think, are going to get the bulk of the carries. And, you know, they may, if they don't redshirt him, Nick Smith may be, you know, one to four carries a game, maybe, something like that.
Yeah.
So he's just not going to – we're not going to have a lot of opportunities, I think, where we're going to salt the clock and running the ball. as much as we'd like, I don't – you know, we're going to be – it's going to be even or we're going to be playing from behind in most games.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think in those cases that's where we'll see more of Anthony Weish as he gets used to the offense because I think he has the best hands. All right, moving on a little bit. Still an offense. Wide receivers. This is, I want to say it's like a thin group, but I feel more confident with some of the position changes, Kenny Byers, some of the recent additions, you know, like some of the freshman guys here and there, and some of the things that we saw in practice. And again, I just feel like because the quarterback position has been so upgraded and the coaching of the quarterback position and the entire offense as a whole has been upgraded, that we will see some of the production that we hoped for the past couple of years. I've always said that we had talented players. I thought Carlos Harris was a talented dude. He probably like, and I think the coaching staff did a poor job with everybody on the team. Because you look at some of those guys, they were productive before. Last year, they're not. Did they just lose talent? No. And then that's why I disagree with some of the hot, quick takes. And they're like, well, North Texas is just not talented. I think that's an easy excuse. Well, how are they not talented? Like, are they just, you know, they're not mentally strong to fight through terrible coaching? I mean, okay, I think that's pretty reasonable.
I think, you know, some people saw the evaluations of talent, like as far as who we brought in as recruits, and those recruits not panning out. You know, the large majority of our classes, you know, it was crap. It was crap. But the guys that we know that have talent, they can be really talented.
Yeah.
So when we missed bad under McCartney. And the guys that we got that are good, I mean, they could be really special.
Yeah. So let's go through that. Tigori, I think you were the most excited about him when we first recruited him. You were excited about his future. And now he gets a chance to really be the dude now, to be the guy. His last year was the first time he got playing time, but it was in spot duty here and there. He made a great catch against Western Kentucky, it made ESPN. That was great. It was a little glimpse into the talent that he has and that we hope to see on display this year. It's the first chance, right. First time he really gets in the spotlight. I know Turner Smiley is the leading returning receiver, but I mean, does anybody really think Turner Smiley really has to produce? No, I don't think that. I think it's Tegory. This guy was fairly highly recruited for North Texas. Everybody was raving about his talent. I think that, you know, now's the time to shine. Now does he shine? Right. Greg, what do you think?
Well, yeah, somebody's got to shine in this offense. If we're going to throw the ball, like you said, 480 times, somebody's got to catch it, right?
Yeah.
So he's going to be one of the guys out there being targeted. I think his skill set in this offense is going, you know, the vertical game, down the field. They're going to use him sometime. They're going to use him on the screen game, obviously. You know, any one of the outside wide receivers, Rutherford, Corey, is going to get attempts in the screen game, but I think he's going to be the home run hitter of our offense, is what I think.
Yeah.
He may not lead the team in receptions, but he may lead the team in receiving yards.
I think that'd be fine with that. Generally, for you like air raid noobs out there, generally, this is just really generally speaking, the outside guys stretch the field. They get deep. Not only just go routes, they don't just run down the sideline, but they also run the deep posts, they also run the digs, the deep stuff, the deep crosses sometimes. They're the ones that you need, you know, the chain movers, you know what I mean? And I think the best in this offense was obviously Michael Crabtree, who was so good that they moved him all over because guys are keying on him. Michael Crabtree obviously is the ideal wide receiver for this offense, and he was like probably the best. What's the word? There's a word for it. The culmination, I guess, of a lot of training and practice and recruiting. Anyway, he was the final form, and where, like, if you say like a Wes Welker or a Danny Amendola is the ideal slot guy, you know, and
right.
Those are both Texas Tech guys, both Air Raid guys.
Yeah.
I don't know if Tegory has the Michael Crabtree build or the skill set to do that, but I think he can be a productive receiver in this offense.
Yeah, I think he can be. When I look at all the three top guys on the outside, Rutherford, Gorey, and Busey, they all have talent. They all should be productive in this offense. I feel really good about those guys. I think the question marks are really when you get towards the inside, our inside wide receivers. Byers has had a nice camp, made the transition. There's been lots of news about that. Kelvin Smith had the big spring game. Mm-hmm. He hasn't really stood out, I think, in the fall camp, but he's still he's going to be an important part of this team because he's going to play that tight end, H-back type of role in the air raid. So he'll be in the backfield blocking, whatnot. Thaddeus Thompson, God, does he have the body that you want for, you know, the inside, go over the middle type of wide receiver.
He's listed as 6'2", 202.
He looks like he's like 250. he looks massive out there. I mean, he looks the part, but he hasn't gotten a lot of targets. And then this is where you get a lot of the freshmen, Tyler Wilson, you know, Deion Hare Griffin, you know, and then you get Khan last year, didn't play a lot. A lot of people have high hopes for him. This is where you get those guys coming in as well. So feel good about the outside. I think there's some question marks on the inside.
Yeah, and I think if, you know, just, you know, I don't know, you call me an air raid prof, I don't know about all that, but I will say I've watched a lot of things because I like it. I've watched, you know, Mike Leach when he's at Texas Tech, and I've watched him at Washington State, and I've watched a lot of the you know, versions of it now in college football. I think one of the things you see is that guys come to, like, they bubble up to the top, you know what I mean? Like, maybe you have a guy, like, this guy's going to be so great, he's been great in camp. And then when it comes down to it, the routes that you were throwing in fall camp or against in scrimmages or in spring games, they're not open as often as you thought they were. Or, you know, the pocket breaks down a little bit and you do a little scramble and there's always a different guy you're looking at, and he's catching these passes, and then you just know that he makes the tough catches when it's 4th and 5, and you have to fire it in there, and he makes a catch, and you're like, well, where did this guy come from? I don't know who that guy's going to be, and we won't be able to know that based on what we've seen so far. We'll see it in the game, and I'm not so worried about that now, because we won't know. There's no way to know now. You get an idea. But they're also going against, you know, the defense that they've seen a lot. They know how hard these linebackers hit. You know, all that stuff. When it's a conference game, and I was going to say when the stadium's filled up, but who knows in Conference USA. But, I mean, you know, when it's an important thing, when it's 4th and 5, and right. You have to make a catch, and we need this play, you know, and it's everybody's tired, everybody's been beat up, and your ankle hurts a little bit, who's the guy that makes that catch there over the middle? From the inside, who runs the crispest route? We'll see. I don't know if we have that guy on the roster now. I think maybe in a couple years, a guy like Deion Hare Griffin will be interesting. I like his speed. I like his acceleration. Right now, as you said, there's a lot of talk about Kenny Byers. I'm not really surprised that he is transitioning well, given, I mean, his ability at corner. Was it 2 years ago? He was never really the speediest cornerback, but he's tough, and he read the defense well. I read the offense well, and he's strong and quick enough. And you don't really need to be super quick to be an inside guy. You just need to be able to know where the openings are and make a catch. And you know, that's it. That's really it. You know, you don't need to be right. You don't need to be a burner. And I think that suits his skill set. I'm happy to see him do well there because he was one of my favorite players of that 2013 defense. I reposted that gif of him making all the tackles. He made 8 tackles against Rice in that Halloween game.
You sure did. 20 years from now, you're going to be talking about, do you remember Kenny Byers and that Rice game?
Look, dude.
35 tackles.
What is that in that linebacker you that was it Craig Robertson and Zach Orr and Fred Scott were looking at? What was the game they were looking at? The Halloween game against Rice. You know what I mean? That's everybody's favorite game. And I'm not ashamed of it.
I didn't say you should be.
So you're right. 20 years ago, they were talking about Kenny Byers making tackles.
Each year, it's going to go up like 5 tackles.
Yeah, I mean, he made 45 tackles. I think if that's a place to be worried, this receiver, the inside receiver, like you said, is that a place to worry about? Yes. And this is one of the areas that could cause us concern this year and the next year as there's a transition there. Like I said, other schools, when they make this transition, they can kind of fill out the outside receivers. Finding everybody, the ideal guys, all in all the positions is hard. And they transition a cornerback, a running back, you know, this, that, and the other, trying to find the right guy while they recruit the ideal candidates. And that's going to be, you know, something to look forward to for those of you that really like to pour over recruiting. Are we going to be getting those guys, the slot guys, to fill in that spot? We'll see.
You know, this year, you talk a little bit about recruiting. I think this is one of the best wide receiver classes in Texas. And that's not coming just from me. That's coming from Gabe Brooks, UNT alum, writer, recruiting analyst, or scout. We don't have any wide receiver commits right now. So I'm not saying that we can't get them. I think they have to see a product on the field first. And then we may start to sway some of the guys.
That's we'll get into recruiting a little bit later. There's stuff to say about that, including a lot of the concern over Frank Wilson at UTSA getting 4-star dudes, getting a dude from Denton. We'll get into that a little bit later.
Another podcast, another time.
I mean, well, I want to touch on it in this one, but maybe not so much. All right, this is another finishing up the offense, the offensive line. A lot of changes happened here. We also didn't get a guy that we thought was coming in, a JUCO guy. You called it the offense, and I think, was it Pro Football? Football Outsiders called the offensive line poor, saying they played poorly. They were not the best, but I think they played okay and well enough at times. They opened up some running lanes for The backs against Iowa, UTSA against Marshall, who was going into that game was one of the best rushing defenses in Conference USA. I think they were good enough. The question will be, can they pass block? Can some of these guys with size, like Jordan Murray, 6'9", 360, you know, can he live up to his size? Can he be a great tackle? Can we get the kind of success that we need, which is basically keeping Alec Morris clean so he can make those decisions that we talked about, so he can complete 500 passes like I want?
You know, you talk about all across the board, I think our offense will be good at times and bad at times. I think this year we're really going to struggle to be consistent. And I think the area where we will be the most inconsistent is offensive line. I think what may end up hurting us the most at offensive line is the depth. You know, I think the first five guys you feel okay with. Once you start getting into that second group, I don't feel comfortable at all.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't think we'll be that bad at the first unit. But yeah, like you said, once a guy goes down, once there are questions, once a guy plays poorly, you can't really push him by saying, "Oh, well, we're going to get this other dude in here," because you have no idea, you know. So yeah, that's going to be an issue, and really, that's an issue throughout this roster. There's only 68 scholarship players, not including the handful of guys that have kind of trickled in recently. But still, it's not a full 85, and plus what 15 other dudes to get 100 dudes out there. You know, there's nobody to push you in practice, or maybe not enough guys to push you in practice to make you the best player that you could be. And also, you just, you know, you don't have any other options in case anybody goes down. Those are major issues. I'm not the biggest offensive line guru, but I think if we're going to pass the ball 500 times, we want to see great pass blocking. And I want to say a lot of air raid stuff is one-on-one, and that's why they do, like, huge line splits. I don't know if they've been doing that in the fall practice. I haven't gotten to see it. But a lot of it's one-on-one. It's to create space, to see the rushers coming in, and you got to win your battles one-on-one.
Yeah. We'll see. I don't think the line splits have been as big as Mike Leach, Texas Tech line splits. They're definitely wider than in the past. You can tell that. I thought, you know, as I highlighted in, you know, the breakdown of the first scrimmage, well, they did a pretty good job of identifying blitzers and picking up the rush in that first scrimmage. I don't know how they did in the second one, didn't go. But I think that's, you know, if they're able to protect Morris, this offense is going to thrive.
Yeah, was it, I was going through, like, old stuff that I had posted. I forgot what I was looking for, but I came across the film room post I did on the Texas game. It was a couple years ago, and there were a couple times that the offensive line was pretty terrible, and I highlighted one what's his name? McNulty was dropping back to pass, had a dude wide open, and Texas just walked in there and sacked him, or he ended up, like, throwing off his back foot, throwing an interception. And the thing was that the offensive line had it blocked. They should have had it blocked, and they kind of made a mistake, and that was the thing that plagued the offense a lot. There was kind of breakdowns in protecting the quarterback. It was one of the reasons everybody was like, hey, let's get Deshaun in there, or let's get Marcus Smith in there, because occasionally the offensive line would just kind of have a brain fart, and you just like, we just need a guy to be able to escape.
But that team, you know, that offensive line was supposed to be the strength of that team.
Yeah.
We were supposed to be able to rely on that, and it wasn't there. So, you know, everybody's downplaying the offensive line this year, and who knows? Maybe these guys step up and play really well. And if the offensive line plays really well, then you start talking about this team could be a bowl team.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll kind of get to that a little bit on predictions a little bit later. But, yeah, that's the thing, is that I have hope because we have an upgrade in coaching staff all the way around. All right. Like I said, I'm not super offensive line guru. I think you're going to have to get your insight on technique and blitz pickups and things like that elsewhere. Let's move on to the defense. The worst defense in North Texas history. They allow 41 a game last season. It was pretty terrible, and I think it was worst in not only that Portland State game, but then coaches fired after that. The Louisiana Tech game, Kenneth Dixon basically walked up the middle for 195 yards and six touchdowns, and that was pretty terrible. The defensive line was getting pushed back. I think everybody remembers that Iowa game where they were just blasting the line. It was kind of like, it reminded me of playing NCAA football like in 2011, 2012. Sometimes when, you know, like everybody would get a pancake block, and I was like, what am I supposed to do here? You know, like, how am I supposed to, I can't do anything when there's four down linemen just on the ground.
You got to blitz more people.
Yeah, I guess. So that was kind of, I think, the lasting memory of last year. Now, I kind of went back and I thought about it and I looked at it, and a couple things stood out. One, the defense improved after McCartney got fired. And I want to say that some of that had to do with the defense just, you know, not being able to play. I guess they're not being able, to motivate themselves. They're not being motivated by the coaching staff and the offense. You know, because it was up to that point 2 years where the defense was the best unit on the field. And, you know, it's really hard to get a stop, give the ball back, and then have the offense shoot itself in the foot. So I think we'll see a better defense this year, not only because of that. Better, more motivated offense, more support. I mean, defense, more support from the offense, but also the change to the 3-3-5 where they're going to be more attacking and aggressive and not the kind of bend but don't break, sit back and base defense, quarters coverage kind of thing. Your thoughts?
Well, I think, let me see here. Let me see how I want to put this. I think our defense will be better because they can't be worse. I mean, I don't have any wood to knock on around here.
I'll knock on wood for you. They could. They could be worse. It is possible.
No, I think this time of year, everybody says our defense is going to be more aggressive. Our defense is going to knock you in the face. You know, we're going to be attacking downhill. Everybody throws out the same old crap story. Okay, well, I think we will actually do those things. I think, you know, we're going to have the 3-3-5. Our defense is going to be not like 2013. Where, you know, it was just amazing and awesome and swarming. But I do think our defense will swarm. I think that if you try to run around our defense, you're going to struggle. I think they're going to do a good job of pursuit. I think we'll struggle up the middle a little bit. I'm not sure about our defensive, our nose tackles. I like Roderick Young. He's had a good camp. Probably one of the guys I'd say could have a breakout year. The addition of DeMonte Hood at defensive tackle. You know, those things help. You know, I think our defensive ends, Roberts, Combs, Tillman Johnson, those guys, they're going to be better. I think our linebacker play is probably going to be better. So, and I think our secondary can cover some people, and our secondary could be really good this year. I think what's going to drive it is if our blitz schemes, our defensive line is able to get some pressure. If they get pressure on quarterbacks, I think our defensive backs are going to thrive.
Yeah, and I look back. I agree with most everything that you said there, if not
of
all.
Of course.
I said a lot of this stuff too. It's like, number one, I think, you know, if you're like, okay, what is this going to look like? How do I know? If you go back and either read about or watch, maybe see it somewhere online, the way that North Texas played against Marshall and against UTSA, two of the best defensive line games they had. Now, Marshall jumped out to a 7-point lead, and you know they ran really well, and they won the game. But one of the things Marshall had to do kind of in the second half was they went for it on fourth down. They had a fake punt, and then they also, you know, Mike Canales was going five wide, empty set with DeMarcus Smith, even though Marshall was just eating that up. All right, that's me complaining. But one of the things they did well was, like, they got early tackles for loss. I think we got, like, a 6-yard tackle for loss on the running back, and another one we got a sack, like, on first or second down on two different drives against Marshall. And that's really what this defense is going for, whereas the ones in the past were like, we're going to tackle everything short. You know, like you maybe get like a three-yard run, but that's it. You're going to maybe get like a five-yard pass, but our guy's going to come up and make a tackle. Right. You know, again, that's why they put our best tacklers at corner, even though they're not necessarily the best corners. Like Kenny Byers would get beat. Zach Whitfield would get beat deep. And that was a problem with the defensive line, is that they didn't always get the pressure to make up for that, right? So that was a weakness there. This defense will be more attacking in that they're going to take they're looking for the early tackle for loss or the early sack to get you off your schedule. And that makes it easier on the defense. So on third down, it's not third and five or less. It's third and eight. Or, you know, third and 12, that's obviously the ideal. Or third and 22 is the ideal, I guess. But it makes it easier. And you look again at the way the defense played against UTSA when they were able to get those early stops on a couple of drives. Or, you know, sometimes UTSA shot themselves in the foot. But the defense was more aggressive. The cornerbacks, the defensive backs were more aggressive. And all of a sudden we're like, wow, where was this earlier in the season? Well, when you're defending third and eight and third and 12, it's so much more easy than when, you know, it's first and 10 and they just run up the middle. Like your cornerbacks are, you know, basically just tackling everybody or your defensive backs. So
we're still going to give up explosive plays this year because we're trying to be so aggressive. But I think we will get more explosive plays. We will get more sacks. We will get more INTs. That's one thing we didn't get a lot of last year was interceptions.
Offenses
didn't have to throw against us. Yeah. But we also didn't do a good job of capitalizing and, you know, making them make mistakes.
And that was one of the things that 2013 defense did was get into the backfield, hit the quarterback, and get interceptions. The play that we keep showing against SMU – where we hit the quarterback and it's a fumble and then we intercept it and run all the way back. That's what happens here. You know what I mean? You got to get to the quarterback. Everybody knows this. And like you said, everybody talks about this. I think, like you said, we'll have a defense that does this. And that's why it's fine. If we allow big numbers on defense or, like, you know, yardage or give up big plays, as long as we're balancing that out by, you know, making plays on the other side. By getting negative tackles, negative plays, and getting turnovers most of all, and getting the ball to our offense. The idea is, I think the whole philosophy is, we're going to score with our offense. We know that. And so if we can basically, it's like in tennis, if we can break serve enough times, we'll win these games. Like, we're going to win by, you know, a couple touchdowns if, you know, we stay on schedule offensively and we break their serve, you know, on defense. That's the idea. And I think that's possible this season. Maybe to the level that we can win more than the two or three games that everybody's predicting.
And, I have four.
and like I said, a lot of I was going through the defense and I kind of got excited about that. I'm like, you know what? We played okay at times. And I think that a lot of times the defense was just demoralized because it was like the Tennessee game. they held Tennessee to 24 points. And, you know, Tennessee was not doing anything, very much of anything. But our offense could do nothing with that. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't pass the ball. So, I mean, it's hard. Like I said, it's hard to go out there and play great defense for 2 years straight with an offense that doesn't give you anything. So.
Yeah, that's very true. It's hard to do that.
All right. I like our guys' defensive ends. I think we see Jaron Roberts do some things. You were high on him last year. I think you wanted to do a sack watch.
I've been high on him for a while. dude's going to lead this team in sacks again. Had the spring injury. He's back, running with the ones. Domination coming at you.
Hot sports take by Greg Goldegger. Fred Scott, do you think he becomes Zach Orr or like the next incarnation thereof?
No, because that's too much to put on somebody. But I do think he finally has a breakout season. I do think that he's a leader this year on and off the field. And I do think that his production level will be up where we thought it should be.
I really like Brandon Gardner. The times I saw him play, live. What was it? It was the SMU, the Rice game. I like what he did. I thought he made some plays. I thought he kind of has like an aggressive attitude. Right. And I like that. You need that as a defender. And I think he's like right at that kind of body size, and like he has the speed to be kind of the hybrid linebacker safety that the 3-3-5 needs. You know, so he can maybe cover a guy coming out of, you know, like a slot dude. He's not going to be cornerback duty, but he can do enough of that that we can be multiple and aggressive.
Yeah, he'll be backing up Fred Scott this year, middle linebacker.
Yeah, I think he's going to get some time out there. He did in the last offense. It was like outside linebacker, and they kind of put him on a receiver. I think we'll see more of that. I think we should be excited about his progress here. And you thought, what's his name, Ijaya and Peters did well?
Yeah, I thought, you know, they made some play. They're the biggest thing that stands out with them is their size and physical, you know, just ability. I mean, when you just look at their guy, they're like 6'3", 260, 6'5", 240.
Yeah.
I don't know if those are their exact weights and height, but still, I think 163 and 165. Yeah. You could tell that they look like men amongst boys out there. So did they make a ton of plays? No. But, you know, their physical, you know, stature out there stands out. And so they're gonna have opportunities in this defense because we're going to do a fair amount of rotating to make plays. So, yeah, they're going to struggle at first because they're making the FCS jump to, you know, big boy football. Or maybe not even FCS, you know, JUCO football jump to FBS, sorry.
Yeah.
So that transition is always tough with the speed of the game, but they're going to be able to help us in a couple ways. Maybe not in pass defense, but in run defense. Early downs, you may start to see those guys.
Yeah, was it Jaron Roberts is 6'2", 252, and Millen Peters is 6'5", 240. I think we're going to see a little bit of Peters coming off the edge, being the fourth rusher in some of these
blitz. The guy that you're going to see doing that more with the first group is Josh Wheeler.
Think so.
I like him coming off the edge, and I think if you ask a lot of people who've been to scrimmages, who've been to the practices,
well, isn't he listed as an end, like a defensive line dude?
Yeah, but he's outside linebacker. But the way
he's 6'3", 240 also, by the way.
Yeah, the way that this defense sets up is it doesn't look like three down linemen, three linebackers, and five defensive backs. It looks like four or five guys at the line of scrimmage, and then you're trying to figure everything else behind that. You know, sometimes it'll just be the middle linebacker. It looks like the only linebacker. Everybody else is at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
And I think that they're going to try – how many times have I said, I think that? Well, what I do believe is that they will be trying to send, you know, those blitzes that confuse offensive linemen.
Yeah.
So you don't know who's going to be coming.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see, like, if you have four dudes out there, like defensive ends, linebackers, that are 6'5", 240, or in that range, anywhere from 6'2", to 6'5", and anywhere from, you know, 215 to 250, I mean, you kind of have to approach them all the same, or then various levels of speed. You kind of have to treat them all kind of the same. Like, this dude could rush and probably, you know, cause some havoc in here, or he can kind of do some covering. And I like that. I like that variability that we bring there. I like it. I think it's going to be useful. It's not kind of what we had last year, where you knew who was going to come in because we were not very aggressive bringing rushes or bringing blitzes, or when we did try to bring them, they were telegraphed.
You could tell in the off season, this staff did a great job. Obviously, we didn't get all the recruits that we thought we were going to get, but they still did a good job of bringing in guys that could be versatile, like you said, on the defensive end. If you're not okay, we can't be really big, or we can't be really small, or, you know, our defenses in the past, you know, we're trying to play a big boy defense with small guys. Well, now we're trying to play, you know, a defense that needs versatile players with versatile players.
Who knew? Recruit to the squad you want. if you go, like, we mentioned some of the defensive backs. Nate Brooks is coming back. Chad Davis is coming back. Ashton Preston, I think, is going to improve a lot. D. Balkman was a JUCO signing that everybody expected to do some things. He has some time to get used to, you know, all the time he missed, the practice time he missed. I don't have him on the season preview, so if you're going to look for him there, you won't find him. But the new guy was Eric Jenkins. He was cleared. He's going to be out there. Obviously, James Gray, Keyshawn McClain, a couple of playmakers, led the team 100 tackles. At least they could tackle, you know?
Well, they had
to. Yeah, it was that or nobody. Often enough, it was nobody. At least on those four, like, that's what I listed, like, six defensive backs. That's kind of all you need, you know, starters, couple of subs, couple of guys here and there. And then I think somebody said Muhammad was named Kari Muhammad. I heard some things about him. Jamil Moore. I liked Cedric Fernandez last season in a couple of games that he played. He's been injured. He's injured again. But I think if he can ever figure things out at that level, I think he's going to bring some solid play to the secondary.
Mm-hmm. You think that?
Yeah, I mean, I liked what he did. He had some good plays against SMU and against Rice. It was that one or two plays against Rice. But I like what he brought to the team. We'll see if he's able to shake off the injury bug, though. I'm happy with the secondary. Again, it's not, you know, we don't have any Jim Thorpe Award winners here. But we don't need that. You don't need that for Conference USA play. We didn't have any Jim Thorpe Award winners for that 2013 defense. And, you know, I think pretty much every dude on that squad should go into the UNT Hall of Fame. Some of these guys, I mean, I know John Skalecki is like a message board everybody likes it too, but I mean, sure, it's fine. We'll see. A lot of these guys that maybe didn't play well or didn't have great tape last season will get a chance to do better this season again, because I think we'll be more aggressive. Of all these guys, who do you think has the best season? We'll have another Greg Godegger's hot sports take.
Eric, I say, I'll go bold. I'll say Eric Jenkins.
What? Just steps in, leads a team. Yeah, I like Nate Brooks, and I like his aggressiveness. I think Chad Davis.
Do you like his hairstyle? Do you like the way he dresses too?
I do.
Shoes are definitely on point.
It's like, man, that dude. Was it Chad Davis, a solid corner? He's been around 4 years. He shouldn't make mistakes, but I expect this is maybe just me. I might be all out my lonesome here. I expect we'll see another guy in there, and Chad Davis kind of transition out of that role. He didn't get a lot of targets last season, and so he didn't give up a lot of yardage because. And you can see this; just watch all the tape. Everybody looked over and they said, "We have, you know." Zach Whitfield, who we have a lot of tape on, and it gets beat deep. And we also have a couple freshmen starting out here. Let's toss it that way. And they did. They picked on Nate Brooks, and I think he did an excellent job given that heavy, heavy duty. Special teams, Tommy Perry has done an excellent job. He's a great coach.
Yes.
And he's an ardent defender of his special teams unit. He was DMing me when we were kind of talking about eliminating kickoffs. He's like, you know, we've been really great on kickoffs. I was like, dude, I know that. You guys have been great. He's a great dude. Yeah. He's a great dude. And he's a great special teams coach. And let's go ahead and toss in. He's a good running back coach in there. We've had excellent production.
I would say that he's still the best recruiter on this staff.
And there's that too.
Well, Eckler has done a great job. I'd say those two guys right there.
You know what? Yeah, let's back up a little bit because we didn't mention Mike Eckler and was it Troy Reffert? I want to call him Reffert, and I think I keep doing that. So if you ain't know, the 3-3-5 is mostly Troy Reffert's thing. He learned it from Rocky Long at New Mexico State, and he coached it at ULM. You're like, ULM, I remember them. Yeah, they gave Auburn a game, and they beat Arkansas back when they had Darren McFadden back in the day.
You go back and you look at his stats of what he did at ULM as a secondary coach and the defensive coordinator, and it was pretty impressive for Sun Belt play.
Yes, it was. Because, you know, we were in the Sun Belt. We know what it was like. Also, Nate Brown, cornerback's coach, played on some of those teams and learned from him. So, you know, he's going to be guiding the secondary into this transition as they play with five guys in the back there. It's not the same, you know, 4-3-4 defense. It's a 3-3-5. We'll see how they work it out. I think it's Mike Eckler's calling the defense, the plays. That's how it's going to work. Reffert's kind of scheme guy.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. So that's going to be interesting. Mike Reffert's kind of a big, you know, like super enthusiastic dude, linebacker's coach, talks like a linebacker.
Mike
coach.
Eckler. Now you're confusing their names.
Again. What did I say?
You said Mike Reffert. You just merged their names.
There you go. What, you know what? That's kind of what they are. They're co-coordinators, so we'll call them Troy Eckler.
You are Mike on the Reffert. Butcher. Name train today, buddy.
I am. It's been a long day. You know, you go to the store with your infant kid, you know. My arm is tired from holding her up the whole time, walking around looking for things.
Yeah, that's why they invented strollers.
Nah, man. Nah. My shoulder's drooling. Because then you got to, like, break it down. I didn't want to do all that. All right, so, again, I'm excited about the special teams. I feel like if they can bring it to the level that they brought it, and I feel like you can with Tommy Perry. The question will be if Seth Luttrell gives him the time and the practice time to kind of do what he does. And I mentioned this in the thing. Everybody talks about that. Oh, there's three phases of the game. Special teams is important. We got to win. Special teams is important. Everybody gives it lip service. But do you give it the practice time? Do you give it its rightful place? My only concern in the Football Scoop little day in the life of thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a tiny thing. It's very tiny, very very tiny. Seth Luttrell's like, hey, Tommy, you gotta wrap it up. Tommy's like, oh shit, I thought I had more time, and he had to wrap up his little presentation to the squad. Is that an indicator that he's not gonna get all the special teams time that he had before?
That's an indication that Tommy has to be more efficient with his PowerPoints.
Yeah, don't put a whole lot of text in there. Don't read your PowerPoints, people. Ladies and gentlemen, Seth Luttrell helping everybody out, coaching us up out here. So who do you think is returning? Weish is returning?
Right now, I'd say yes. And Jenkins, didn't get to see him. He was the other returner that was out there, I think, at the second scrimmage. A lot of people said he looks like a natural. Up for grabs between those two guys. I feel comfortable with either one.
Here's the thing, is that last year, Trey Johnson, walk-on, tiny little dude, returned a punt against UTEP. I think in the last, 3-4 years, we've had some excellent return games. And I think maybe Carlos Harris was probably the biggest disappointment, in that he obviously had the skills, but just couldn't quite ever produce. And what's his face? I forget his name right now. Probably muffed too many kicks. The receiver.
Kidsey.
Yeah, Darvin Kidsey. He muffed too many, and he fumbled a bunch. Those are the only knocks you can put on.
I never thought Carlos Harris was a good return guy anyways.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is that he had, you know, he had like this. He's fast, he's quick, he's agile. You would think he'd be good. He has hands, but he never made the plays. He never
is
had.
Is he returning kicks in arena football? Or no?
I like Carlos Harris, man. Y'all just some haters. I think there's unnecessary hate on that dude. But that's fine. You know, I think he brought it upon himself. And that's fine. Quickly. SMU, you predicted a loss. Why did you do that?
Well.
We'll get into it when we do the podcast the week before the game, which is like next week. We're gonna get more into this SMU game. So just give me I'm just looking at it right now in my living room.
Okay, they're a year ahead of where we are.
Yeah,
basically, they had to redo everything. So yes, they do have more talent. They do have more depth. I think that's why I picked them to win. I think. Had this game been at SMU, I probably would have picked it a larger spread. But I think that our offense, their defense isn't going to be that great. And their offense is good, but, you know, Davis, I think we can corral him at times, but I still think that they have more weapons than we do. So, you know, I mean, first game, for as bad as we were in transitioning to this new offense and everything, you know, managing emotions for Alec Morris being out there, you know, managing the emotions for all the new guys being out there, all that stuff I think plays into it, and that's why I picked us right now to lose the game. I mean, you can hate me if you want to.
I hate you. No, yeah, I'm going to go over there and hurt you in person. Yeah, I think all that makes sense. I think when I started writing the preview, I was like, we're probably going to win like maybe one game. And if we have the season that SMU had last season, I'd be happy with that. Score a lot on offense, figuring it out on defense. You know, they were basically just
so
40 and
so
40.
Basically, that was your feeling at the beginning. Then you wrote 10,000 words, and that made you delusional to pick us to win seven games.
That's what happens. That's what happens when you just like when you're going through like who's gonna be the fifth string defensive tackle. You know what I mean? Like when you're thinking about that and looking at tape, then you're like, you know what? This team could probably beat everybody. that's what happens, and that's fine. I mean, you know, I said that. I gave the like I've been too deep in this thing. One, I just can't pick a loss against SMU at home where we smoked them. I think that we're not easy to game plan for because nobody knows what this team's going to be. Nobody has any idea. Even us who have looked at it and looked at scrimmages, we have no idea. Chad Morris has no idea. However, Seth Luttrell and company have tape on SMU. They have a whole season of what they're going to be like. They have a whole season on Matt Davis. We kind of know what to expect, and they don't know. And we're at home, you know, and that gives a little bit in some of that emotions and things. SMU's coming to this game, 10-point favorites. They feel like they could beat us. They're like, we got to get – last time we were here, they beat us 43 to whatever in the hell. It's a six, right? You know, so I think it's on them a little bit. And that's why I see us winning this one in a tight one and a close one. Closer than the experts think, as the old man says. Bethune-Cookman, I think we win that one, and I think they score more points than we're ready to be happy with. Same? I think that's what you said. Same. Yeah, you said 42-30. Florida kicks their ass. Yeah, that's what's going to happen.
It's possible that the game is closer than some people think, just because the fact that Florida has no offense.
That would be great. I mean, hey, let's dream a little bit here. Seth Luttrell gets a win in the swamp. You know what? I might have to scrounge up a couple bucks.
You might have to ride in the street.
Yeah, and some goodwill with my wife and take a trip down there just on the off chance that we could upset them in the swamp, and I could say, hey, I was there. And then
it's
they'll probably
unbearable. You're gonna have swamp crotch and everything.
Just yeah, I mean, then it's like that. You have to like ride alligators to the airport or something like that. There, Rice. You're not high on Rice, and I don't think I am either. And we both have a win at this point against Rice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Rice didn't have a home crowd, so it's basically a practice stadium. You know,
but they're doing some renovations. Everybody's doing renovations.
Yeah,
so.
But they still don't have a home crowd. Are they? You know, bringing people in.
I mean, look, they kicked our ass 77-21, and there was no home crowd. So
that's different. We had a high school coach as our coach. I don't count. Middle Tennessee. You said Middle Tennessee will have too much firepower for North Texas to stop. And we're getting at the point here where this is like so far ahead that we don't know. And I made these predictions based on the assumption that we're going to have a full team and, you know, the depth problems
and
are not going to rear their head.
I made my prediction on the fact that I thought MTSU would have a full team. And they're not. They lost one of their best wide receivers or tight end, Pettis. Yeah. So
you had it 37-24. I had it 45-21, both in Middle Tennessee's favor. Marshall. Greg says, could this be a surprise game? Maybe Marshall's offense isn't that good. Well, their defense is still good enough to slow down North Texas. I believe Marshall will win in a close one. Is that how you read it? That's how I read all your stuff. I feel like
the right person. Of
Chase. I said Chase Litton is a little bit older, and I cannot shake the feeling that North Texas had a shot at the herd in 2015. I look back at that again, and I feel like we had to, if there was ever a game to upset them, it was that one. This was my wild card pick, and I said we win this one based on nothing really strong and evident. You Army. You called it a win for us. I call it a win for us. They lost your quarterback, right?
Yeah, Bradshaw.
We picked this before we knew that. Then finally, at UTSA. Well, not finally. There's a couple more games here. UTSA. You said UTSA is better than advertised, and they're going to win. I can't pick UTSA to win any game against us ever.
It's tough. I mean, dude, they're off season, and you know, maybe next week or whenever we talk about it. Frank Harris done a great job.
Yeah.
With recruiting, and he's won the off season. So I don't know if it translates to the field, but I think his team will play with some swag. And if they get the quarterback situation figured out and they get a good one, Jarvion Williams is a hell of a running back. So
yeah, I'll say they were a little bit more put together team than we were at the same point last season, and we won. They kind of had the same situation where a coach maybe is starting to check out, and they're like, we need a guy with fire in here. And I think their situation was such that they could get a guy with fire and plug and play, basically, and have a great offseason. And we weren't at that point. That we let the McCartney thing simmer too much. We probably should let him go maybe at the end of 2014. And then imagine we had Latrell in at that point. All right, Louisiana Tech. You had a win for little old North Texas.
And it's an upset.
Yeah, I think what I say, I would not be surprised if Louisiana Tech is struggling by this point, and I would not be surprised if the opposite were true either. It's a big season for Skip Holtz. I think he did a great job getting in some transfer quarterbacks in, but now it's full on his recruits and everything. He doesn't have Kenneth Dixon. He doesn't have anybody left over from the Sonny Dykes era. It's all him, and I feel like this is a point where they're a little bit more vulnerable. Don't let any Louisiana Tech fans hear me or you say that, because then they start tweeting at you. Western Kentucky, you say they have too much talent. I do also. Although I wouldn't be surprised if we beat them if it were here. But we're going to Western Kentucky. I think that puts them over the top. But it's gonna be a little bit closer, I think. Then you think Southern Miss, Southern Miss. My friend's he's a teacher there now, and so like a little.
That's
little
good. Yeah. I don't really care.
I mean, it's just a fun fact. All right.
Keep it to yourself.
Fun fact, my other friend. All right, Southern Miss, best team in Conference USA. They are number one on everything. I'm looking at what's in the drawer, pulling out the magazine now.
And it will tell you. Yeah. Well, that's only Texas football. A lot of people were picking Middle Tennessee. So, but in the West Division,
It's Southern Miss.
Southern Miss, far and away.
I think if we have any shot at this, it would be because the new guy, what's his name, Jay Hobson, can't keep it going for Todd Monken, and then there you go. But if that doesn't happen, they still have too much talent for us, I think, top to bottom. Then finally, UTEP. UTEP, they won with basically freshmen and sophomores. Last season, they were injury plagued, and they won because we didn't have an offense, even though we had a special teams. That was Trey. Was it Trey Johnson? Scored the.
Yeah, you just said his name like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah,
pull it together.
There's too many names to remember, man. All right, so again, UTEP, you picked a win. I picked a
loss.
I said UTEP, you picked to win. I picked UTEP to win also. Finally, final record 4-8 for Greg, 7-5. That's what I picked. I looked at it. I was like, I picked 7 wins. What the hell's wrong with me? A lot's wrong with me. A couple other people were like, this guy's crazy. But they did say, and the other guy picked 4-8. What the hell's his problem? We're drinking too much green Kool-Aid.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot's wrong with us guys.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think if you polled most North Texas fans, or most hardcore North Texas fans, they'd be happy with 4 wins.
Yeah, I would be also. If we got 4 wins, I'd be happy. And if those wins were SMU and UTSA and then whatever else, well, I guess Bethune-Cookman and then one of the other ones. I think it's possible. Conference USA, there's not that much of a gap between your Southern Miss and your Middle Tennessee and your North Texas. Mm-hmm. You know? Like you say, you lose a quarterback. You lose a big-time receiver. And all of a sudden, things are a little bit more even. Look at North Texas the past couple of seasons. We didn't have a quarterback that could play at this level, and we're the worst team in the nation. if you drop in any kind of competent quarterback, Derek Thompson back there, I think we turn from a 1-11 team last season to probably a 4-5 win team at worst. So there you go. I think that's director's commentary of this season preview. In that, also, I talked a little bit about recruiting. I'm not the biggest recruiting fan in that I don't follow it very closely. I was trying to get a guy to write a little piece, but they didn't make it by press time. So you had to stick with me. Just me talking about it. You get what you get, guys. Yeah, just unfortunately.
You could have asked me to do that.
I mean, you know, you still can. Nobody's stopping you, guy. The other thing about this whole thing is I addressed in there some of the Frank Wilson discussion, because I think he has an easier job recruiting to San Antonio, to UT San Antonio, in that, yeah, it's like, hey, come be a part of this thing. Come be a part of the only college football team in the San Antonio, it's not even a metroplex, in the San Antonio metropolitan area, right? That makes sense. The easy sell, and a lot easier sell than what we have here, which is, hey, be the team of the, what, Metroplex? Well, there's a lot of teams. You got SMU, you got TCU, and then everybody has their Big 12 team that they follow, right? It's not so easy, even though there's a lot of talent here. And it's an easier sell to get to San Antonio, to UTSA. And so giving him points for that, I think, is deserved. Say, great job, Frank Wilson. Now, can you coach up these dudes? You get the talent in there, okay. Can you coach them up? Can you win football games? Based on resume, I think you got to say Seth Luttrell is a better game coach than Frank Wilson. But obviously, it's all going to change. Based on, you know, recruiting resume in this short time period, with, you know, obviously noting the different circumstances here, you got to give it to Frank Wilson. You got a couple 3-stars, 4-stars. Okay, we'll see. I think Seth Luttrell's first big effort will come and his come this season, and his biggest recruiting tool will be the offense that he puts on the field starting September 3rd. Would you agree with that?
We shall see. We shall see. sure, I agree with it. I'm hungry, man. Yeah. We've been doing this for like an hour and 30 minutes.
Hour and 26 minutes to be exact. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to the Mean Green Nation podcast. Thanks for listening all the way through. If you listened all the way through, tweet at us. Say, yeah, I listened all the way through. And then we'll know. We'll know. Thanks again for listening. For Greg, who's finna go eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich or something.
I need a little bit more substance than that, but thank you.
I think just substance, not substance. You confuse. You're meshing words. You're thinking sustenance, substance.
I'm so hungry that we've been going for so long that I'm starting to follow your path.
Yeah, that's what happens. All right, I'm going to let you go, Greg, but I'm going to answer this question from Scott Campbell on Twitter. Does our message board hurt or help our cause more? I mean, we have fans, quote-unquote, apparently hoping our quarterback is going to be throwing interceptions. I think that we have the least scary fan base message board of all the college football teams that you think about. Worse things are said the bigger the schools. Crazier things are said at the bigger schools. I don't think it's healthy to really read a lot of that if you are a parent or a player.
No.
Don't do that. I mean, was it like Gabby Douglas, right? The gymnast was kind of getting upset at social media and stuff like that. Don't do that in competition. When you're there and you're competing out there, especially if things are not going great, do not read that stuff. It's not going to help you out. You need a filter, because fans, even me and Greg, don't listen to our show. Just because there's nothing that we're going to say that's going to help you out. People are going to help you out, your coaches, you know, and your support system. For everybody else, I mean, whatever. They're just people talking stuff. I wish we'd had a more elevated conversation on our message board, but, I mean, what are you going to do? And that's about all there is to say about that. We're going to let Greg go eat his more sustenance sandwich. And, ladies and gentlemen, thanks again for listening to Mean Green Nation Podcast. Tune in next time as we get into more recruiting talk. All right, bye.